It is Friday. We got things to talk about because we have Karen Vealy in here, and we're going to have our special guest, Chris Galloway, come in at 1 o'clock.
And now, here's Bill Binica.
Okay, hi. You're Bill. I like to start off with the very lighthearted if I can, but I'm not going to today. Because here's what I think, and because we're going to do calcoastnews.com, and this doesn't really fit into that. So I'm going to save this now so I can get it said. This is after this Free Commission, investigated Penn State and found that the president, the vice president, the athletic director, and Coach Joe Paterno were all responsible for covering up the rape of these young men, young boys. They weren't men, they were boys. So now it goes back to the NC2A's court. All right. So now the NC2A has to decide what kind of punishment it wants to levy. So they had the worst punishments or something in the Tribune. Let me see what it says. It had the worst punishments, biggest college scandals. And so here was a punishment right here. In 1986, SMU was not allowed to play for a year. This is how horrible what happened at Penn State is, as far in my opinion. I truly and honestly believe that the NCAA should say to the Penn State University that you will, for one complete, what would you call it, academic cycle, 4 years, for one four-year cycle, you will not have a football team. You'll not be able to compete in college football. There should be something worse. I don't know what, but... Anyway, but the least they should do is that, because anything less than that is a slap in the face to the men who are now grown up and who were hurt very badly when they were young. That's my opinion.
This is Talk is Cheap. With Bill Benica. The Friends and Neighbors Network.
Your business will work better when you work with Coastal Computers. Coastal Computers is here for small business. It doesn't matter whether price is your first concern or your last. Service is Coastal Computers' first concern, and that includes your successful, user-friendly, and painless operation. Really, computer networking where the tail doesn't wag the dog. Coastal Computers is known for making the tough stuff easy. They've been doing it for over 25 years with lots of happy clients. And they're worth a call. 543-9047. 543-9047. Coastal Computers. Microsoft, Intel, and networking specialists. Call 543-9047 or visit ccslo.com. People in the business of letting you get on with your business. Call 543-9047 for Coastal Computers.
California is number one at a lot of things. Surfing, wine. We're the state with the most millionaires, the most nonconformists, the most millionaire nonconformists. That's why Farmers, the number one insurance group in California, is proud to have been born right here. Our 4,200 agents statewide have the experience to help you tailor a plan for the unexpected.
You can't go wrong with a guy named Wright, so give Farmers agent Mike Wright a call at 541-3942.
Number one ranking based on market share of property and casualty insurers in California.
I'm here. All right, here we go. Let's do our What Happened on This Day in History, according to the Tribune today, and find out what the heck happened this day in history. Our flashback, our highlight, on July 13th in 1787, the Congress of the Continental Confederation adopted the new Northeast Ordinance. Can I start all over again, because I'm just winging it. You know, I was in the midst of thinking about what Karen and I were going to talk about. Let me try again. Our highlight in history, on July 13th in 1787, the Congress of the Confederation adopted the Northwest Ordinance, which established a government in the Northwest Territory, an area corresponding to the present-day Midwest and Upper Midwest. In 1793, French revolutionary writer Jean-Paul Marat was stabbed to death in his bath by Charlotte Corday, who was executed 4 days later. And probably something tawdry was going on there. 1863, deadly rioting against the Civil War military draft erupted in New York City. The intersection was put down 3 days later. 1923, a sign consisted of 50-foot-tall letters spelling out Hollywoodland, was dedicated to Hollywood Hills to promote a subdivision. The last four letters were removed in 1949. 1960, John F. Kennedy won the Democratic presidential nomination on the first ballot of his party's convention in L.A. 1978, Lee Iacocca was fired as president of Ford Motor Company by Chairman Henry Ford II. You remember the Pinto, don't you? All right. 1 year ago, California became the first state in the nation to add lessons about gays and lesbians to social studies classes in public schools under a measure signed by Governor Jerry Brown. Our birthdays today, actor Patrick Stewart is 72, actor Harrison Ford is 70, actor director Cameron Crowe is 55, rock musician Will Champion is 34, actor Fran Kranz is 31, and actor Stephen R. McQueen is 24. We say happy birthday to them, and happy birthday to you if it's yours today. Happy birthday. Well, let them do it.
Happy birthday to you.
Country Oaks Care Center. Caring for the loved ones that you care about. Country Oaks, owned and operated by John and Sharon Henning. They're friends of mine, really nice friends, and that niceness shows at their 57-bed skilled nursing facility at 830 East Chapel in Santa Maria. Country Oaks specializes in short-term rehabilitation and long-term care. Country Oaks accepts Medicare, Medi-Cal, HMOs, and private insurance, and will do the paperwork for you. They offer physical, occupational, speech, enteral, and IV therapies, including a fully equipped therapy room. At Country Oaks Care Center, your loved ones will find a warm and caring staff and a home-like atmosphere. All activities are geared to individual needs and desires, as well as nutritious meals and that extra ounce of caring and a cup of slow-roasted coffee. From Rotary to their annual float participation in the Santa Maria Elks Rodeo Parade, the Hennings are involved in their community. At 830 East Chapel in Santa Maria, Country Oaks Care Center. Caring for the loved ones that you care about.
We're on duty now. Karen Vealy, Bill Benica, and CalcoastNews.com. All three of us are here at one time, and we want to welcome Karen on this Friday. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Nice to see you, kiddo.
Nice seeing you.
Well,
too.
I have to say the top story of the day is actually a hoot. There's no other way to look at it as far as I'm concerned. And so I'll let you tell the story because it's just so fun.
Well, back in February, the city decided to do their Good Neighbor program. And they started it about a month ago, and the Good Neighbor Program is a program where they want people to be a good neighbor by turning their neighbors in. If you see a weed higher than 12 inches, if you see somebody's trash can left out too long, you know, there's a whole list, and the whole back page is all these agencies you can turn your neighbors into. So they call it the Good Neighbor Program. I guess they used Measure Y funds to do this. So they hired two inspectors.
In New Jersey, they call it the recently dead.
So they hired two inspectors to go out, and one of the inspectors had a call from one neighbor and went over and looked at a piece of property. Well, this place is a disaster. You know, it's got broken windows, a chimney falling down, a fence almost laying on the ground, weeds taller than people. You know, so it's she posted a sign on it and gave, I think it was the 27th, gave them to the 7th or 8th to fix it, not realizing the city owned the property. So the city then realizes they take it. They didn't fix it. Now, I did hear that they ran over this morning and started working on it. Or, you know, so it's, when I was there yesterday afternoon, it was in the shape it was. Dan and I went and took some pictures. Dan took the pictures, and I went with him.
Is there any, well, this looks like a ramshackle affair, and I'm trying to remember, I mean, I have friends that live on the end of Dan Street. I'm trying to remember if I've seen this. I must have seen this, but not paid much attention to it, except probably go, eh. It's not occupied, is it?
It's not occupied, and the interesting thing is, this is not the exception. It seems to be what's happening with a lot of city properties. The city has 280 owned properties. Some of them were donated, different things, and some of them are vacant land, some of them are buildings, some of them are homes. But we went by and looked at four of them yesterday that were just disasters, and. And this, the one on Dane is bad, but there was another one on Lizzie that was even worse. This place, I mean, there's trash. There was numerous weeds.
Is there a domicile of some kind on it?
There's a home on it, but here's the sad thing. It was donated to the city about 15 years ago. Beautiful adobe. I don't think it's fixable now. There's cracks all the way through the walls. They'd never kept it up. They put a plaque about the people that donated it in the front yard. And then
We're big on plaques in San Luis. I got to tell you that. We keep the bronze people in business.
But the interesting thing is, while the city is running around, they gave 90 tickets, more than 90 tickets out last month, to homeowners who have to pay a fine. They're given 10 days, and the fines are from $50 to $200. So people are getting fined for having messy property when the city itself has some of the worst property.
Now, does this include, is the trash can thing involved in that?
Yes.
It is.
Yes, you can get a $50 ticket up to $200.
Well, now I might as well. Now I'm really going to go into witness protection program. Is there a reward?
I don't think there's an award.
No reward.
The city will call you a good neighbor. But think about this: if they gave almost 100 tickets out last month, and you know they're making the city, if they're $200 a piece, that would be $20,000. So they're probably anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000 in income for the city for the Good Neighbor program. But meanwhile, the city's not keeping up their own properties. And when they found out, suddenly the sign's off that property. They gave themselves to the 8th to fix it. The city didn't follow their own rules and fix it in the 10 days required to fix it. And then when I was looking at the house for the house on Lizzie, and someone had told me you can't miss it. Well, you go along the street and everybody's weeds are cut. The yards are fine. You know when you get there because suddenly the weeds are 7 feet tall.
Wow.
You know, so you know that this is, and then once you get past the city-owned property, they're cut again.
What a hoot. An ugly hoot. This is, and also, you know, this ties into that. A discussion I had with someone, the city owns a piece of property somewhere near the Prado Day Center. And so I think I queried as to why, you know, well, why don't you clear it and let people put their campers on it, you know? But that was unacceptable because, you know, we're trying to drive the people out of town. So that was no good. But anyway, that's very interesting. And it's too bad. And the city's not going to find itself. Why don't they call it the Bad Neighbor Program? Why wouldn't you call it the Bad Neighbor Program? Because the person that is violation of the ordinance, he's a bad neighbor. She or it is a bad neighbor, as opposed to the good neighbor who turns and rats on the other person, which is just ridiculous, of course.
I find this very odd behavior for the city.
Yeah, well, it's the happiest place in the world. Anyway, so that's crazy.
And the other issue here is why don't they sell some of these properties?
Oh.
If they're having this much trouble with the economy, why do they just sit on them and let them, they've let these properties go to the point where the value is way down. Many of these properties have been sitting, rotting for years and years and years.
Well, here's the thing that I don't know that much about what city does with private property or city property that becomes city property. Have we sold? Does the city have they sold any pieces of property?
Now that I don't know. I know most of them that I went by yesterday were vacant. I did notice several of the city properties that had people, you know, they're renting to people.
For people that have listened, and our phone system is being worked on as I speak. We're resolving the fact that people can't call in because of the FCC's ruling, but we're working on that now. This was interesting because Tascadero Mike, who calls in, he's repainted the signs and repainting the signs at Ben Franklin's on Highgarra Street, and so we had lunch there yesterday with him. And that piece of property that's right along there on South Highgarra that used to have VPA, the Volkswagen Porsche Audi place, and all that, was going to become a park. That's what we were told, and that was, how old am I now? It was a long time ago. And it was going to become a park. Well, it's open space, which is nice. Once again, we'll say thank you for the open space, but it's not parkish in any way, and so I don't know whatever happened to that park. But again, we don't have any dough. May sell a house and make that a park. It's a nice little piece of property for a park. You know, but then the homeless people are right down the creek right behind that. So, you know, they probably say, well, they'd hang out there. So I would bet that's why nothing's been done.
I think that's why they lock the bathrooms and different things to make it tough on them.
Yeah, I would bet. You know, I was trying to convey in a way, it's impossible to do it. And I've never been in this position. Well, I tell you, when I first was discharged from the Navy with a buck and a half in my pocket, I was close. But I had someplace to go. I think people really need to try to grasp the idea of people who have nothing. That's what when you have to look at the homeless, it's not like, well, they got something.
Yeah.
A lot of these people have absolutely nothing. And therefore, they can't get registration for their vehicle. They can't get gas for the vehicle. They can't do anything. They have absolutely nothing except for the people that are capable of running around town and picking up tin cans, you know, aluminum cans, and, you know, getting a penny a piece for them, whatever you get. It's insane, really.
And the other odd thing is if the program here wants so much of someone's income. I did, you know, I called around. The parking programs usually do not make someone give 70% of their income. And they say the idea here is to get everybody into housing. But then I did find up in near the Monterey area, I found a homeless shelter that does have you give 50% of their income. But they almost always have someone into housing within 90 days. Here, the average is a year and a half. And if you go to the Prado Day Center website, they got one person in housing last year. Now, how many people are giving their money? And D. Torres said it can take a year and a half, 2 years, but we'll get them into housing if all of them, if they stay in the program. Well, if they only got one, their rate isn't real good. And why keep all this money? If you have someone, it doesn't cost $7,000 to get into low-cost housing. So why keep somebody's money when they don't have enough money to buy clothes, they don't have enough money to buy their things that they need because of this?
Well, and then this, what is it, St. Barnabas Church, is that the name of it in Aurora Grande?
Yeah.
I think so. They're not having success with their parking program because the background investigations that they do on the people have turned out to be such that a lot of people don't qualify anyway, and so and then a lot of other people are, I suppose, don't want to be investigated, so they say, okay, we're not going to do it. I don't know. We don't have a great answer yet, as far as I'm concerned, and it's something the city still needs to work on very, very strenuously. Now, when you go to a cafeteria, the food, you go by the different kinds of food, you know, and
yeah,
you decide what you want. On the Bob Jones bike trail, the mountain lions wait for you to go by, and then they pick whatever they want, and they eat you.
This is the second time they've had a posting that they've seen a lion near the thing. And the problem with mountain lions, they rarely go after people, but you don't want to run, and you want to look big. I remember I was living up in the Sierras. And there, I was teaching a bridge class over at the senior center. And they'd had a mountain lion out back, so they gave out these packets. You know, what to do if you see one, look big, put your hands up, yell. And that night, a mountain lion took down a horse. And I was thinking, how much bigger can...
Well, yeah, that's really rough.
But,
right,
I
there.
Mean, they go after running things. So it's kind of the Bob Jones trail.
It's kind of like the instinct to catch it. The instinct to catch, yeah, like a cat. You know, wants to go after something that's moving. How interesting. But you're right. They tell you to, you know, put your legs out and put your arms out and yell and all that kind of stuff. But I got to admit, you know, it's hard. It's hard in the face of that if you have a snarling, hissing bobcat looking at you to not say, I gotta go someplace.
And you don't want to get down. I guess I probably 15, 20 years ago, if I remember correctly, there was a child. I don't know if it was attacked and killed or just attacked in Sonora area, and the child squinched down. And if you look little, they will actually more likely to pounce on you. So the idea is to try to look, good and not run, not get down. But what would you do?
If I see one,
I may run.
Look at this. Look at the size of me. I'm not going to squinch down. It's not going to fool the cat at all. Can I? Do they like fat people better than skinny people? Probably.
Well, they like horses.
They like horses, so I'm in trouble right there.
I wanted to bring something up back on the homeless for a moment.
Sorry. Yeah, we're going to go backwards. Here we go.
They had a hearing yesterday, and not a lot happened. It's part of, there's two cases. There's the criminal and the civil. And the judge yesterday was Septon, I think his name is. And the interesting thing was Crandall's the civil case, and he's hearing the criminal case, and he's, you know, ruling up. It's basically the same issues, but they want the money given back. But he wanted to take things under submission, and both sides were talking. But it was kind of funny. Attorney Saro Rizzo, you know, the judge is saying, well, I took this ruling to mean this. And Sorrow's going, well, no, I took it to mean this. And Sorrow looks over and goes, Judge, I respect your wisdom on this. He goes, no, you don't. It was kind of a jovial.
That's interesting.
It was kind of fun to.
That is interesting.
But they should come out with when they come out with a ruling. They didn't. Not a lot happened. Just the judge took things under submission. But it was.
My wife, when she, instead of saying you're an idiot, she goes, you know, you're funny. That's my wife's way of saying dope. All right. So this is what happens. This is what happened with judges and lawyers too.
And on
and I love her for it. It's quite all right. Yeah.
The other thing that's going on is they're planning on Sorrow and Stu Jenkins. Sorrow and Stu Jenkins are the attorneys for the homeless. And they are planning on going, as soon as they start ticketing again, going to Judge Crandall and asking Judge Crandall for an ex parte and to put a restraining order against the police. Now, can you imagine this? A restraining order against the police for the homeless?
What other action can be taken? You know, the city decided, okay, we're going to change the ordinance so we can do what we thought we wanted to do to begin with, and so now what?
They actually, in the ordinance, say they are overruling the judge and that he misinterpreted the law. And they even use his name as they go down. And I thought, you mentioned almost 30 different ways why this judge isn't very smart. I don't think that's a smart thing for a city to do.
But that's weird. I don't know what's going on with this. You know, and I want to say this. It's not like we're trying to beat this to death. What we're trying to do is understand it. You know, because the people on the city council that are so adamantly for all this regulation and the severity of the regulation, and they're all in lockstep on this, it's like, well, wait a minute, how do other individuals not see it the same way they do, and when they all see it exactly alike? It's kind of like weird to me.
And, you know, I thought with the city, they're very supportive of the Prado Center. They say it's a mimic of what they're doing, the parking program in Santa Barbara. But Santa Barbara says what we're doing here is criminal and affront to the homeless. They do not believe that they're doing a good thing taking the 70% income and the rules put on the homeless here. But I think it's partly fear-motivated on behalf of the council. Because as I noticed when they were getting up there and they were speaking during, I was at Tuesday's council meeting, it appeared to be that their big fear was, oh, we're going to become a magnet. Every homeless in the county or in the state will come here if we allow them to park, and that it was going to be, it was just going to balloon in and destroy the city. But it really appeared to be completely fear motivated.
Well, I understand that concern for the city. I understand what you'd say, okay, I'm concerned about this. But now let's look at historically what's happened here anyway. When they first opened the first homeless shelter out by the sheriff's department, if you remember, and that was 20 years ago, 15 years ago, a long time ago, 20 years ago, I bet. When they first opened that homeless shelter, we sent a reporter out there to, you know, cover the event. I can't tell you the number. There's about 15 people, I believe, maybe more than that. So I'm not going to give you a number. But anyway. Of the people that were there, and she went and talked to every single person.
Yeah.
Not one of them was from San Luis Obispo. Not one was from San Luis Obispo. And they said, and so she said, well, and we had it on tape, you know, as an interview. Well, how come you're here? And they said, well, are you kidding? Look at this really nice shelter. You can take a shower, you know, get a place to sleep. Why wouldn't we be here? And then Sheriff Williams got in trouble because he made a comment that the way for the, they should put the bathrooms and the homeless shelter in separate places, and they have to walk through the shooting range in order to get to it.
Oh, jeez.
That's what he said. He said that.
At this, there are people though that are homeless here that were raised here, that grew up here. A lot of them. You know, this isn't just people from other areas. And during that Tuesday council meeting, one person that spoke in favor of the parking program can't be enacted for homeless. It's supposed to be a ban. It's not supposed to be a way of stopping homelessness. They're claiming it's a way of stopping camping. But the person that spoke in favor of it primarily said they were afraid of the homeless. They don't like to walk to the gym because they have to walk past homeless. The Prado Day Center, one of the council members, I think it was Carter, brought up, well, you know, they're afraid of the homeless, the people that work at Prado, to have to drive by them. And I'm thinking, why are you working at Prado if you're afraid to drive by homeless people on your way to work? It just, the whole situation. But then the other 16 people that spoke, probably about 8 of them were homeless themselves. Oh, it was just, I mean, they would get up there and start talking and just start weeping about the fear of, you know, trying to sleep and suddenly someone's on top of your roof banging, screaming at you, horns honking. And it was very, it was moving. And I saw people in the, you know, in the people that were attending the meeting had tears in their eyes. And then the council, everyone spoke in favor of them not doing this emergency ticketing, except for one. And they kept bringing up that one person. Well, that person said this. They kind of just put the rest out of their, it wasn't that important. I don't know if it wasn't important, but it didn't seem to move them to not do this emergency program. And I have a funny feeling this emergency ordinance is going to come back and bite them.
Well, from what Judge Crandall said the last time out, I don't know why all of a sudden he'd, you know, cave and say, well, I must have been wrong last time, so now I'm going to say, this is what you should do. I don't know to what degree a municipality can take public streets and declare what can and cannot happen on them.
And they can to a degree if they use the right signage. The vehicle code says that you have to have signage, and primarily because the streets belong to the people of California. Anyone from California should be able to drive into slow and not know you can't put your head down and go to sleep for a minute. And I've done it a lot. I've probably done it at least once a year, stop somewhere when I'm driving somewhere far and I'm starting to get tired, and I pull over and sleep. And I, you know, it's not if we're not going to allow that here, it needs to be very easy for people to see that that's a criminal activity in the city of slow.
But then the question becomes, what makes that a criminal activity? You know, if we didn't have to sleep, we wouldn't sleep. You know, we'd stay up all the time.
And that's what Stu Jenkins and Sara Rizzo are pushing, is that that's a human right. And if you don't have a home, you can't criminalize the homeless for sleeping, is what they're saying.
And I thought, I thought we'd established along the way already before that it's not a crime to be poor. That's not a crime to have no money. It's not somebody's fault, in particular. Anyway, it's weird. And when you say people that lived here, we used to call them the dog ladies. And they lived in a car. There's two sisters lived in a car with a dog. You'd see them around town, and every now and then they'd be wandering around town, all that kind of stuff. Well, they had grown up very well off in San Luis Obispo, and had lived in a house on Broad Street, and then parents died off and whatever. Anyway, they eventually both became just whacked in the head there, you know. But this is the other part of the problem we talk about with the homeless is the fact that, you know, there's huge mental health concerns with the homeless that we just ignore. There's huge mental health concerns. No, there's not enough. There's no mental health concern. That's the sad part. There should be. And so, you know, here's too late, and they had money. They actually had money. I was told that they had dough that was available to them, and yet they chose to live in their car and live with a dog, which was a little bit weird. Anyway, we're going to come back and talk about more things on calcosnews.com. Friday get-together after these words.
Working harder but not getting ahead? The rich get richer no matter which way the economy is headed, because today's times are filled with opportunity. If you understand the new rules of money, you need to attend a free Rich Dad Education Workshop coming to San Luis Obispo. Based on the teachings from the best-selling book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, this totally free two-hour event will show you how to survive and build security during these hard economic times. We teach why your house is not an asset, why you may not want to diversify, why you may not want to invest in 401ks or mutual funds, why saving money will never make you rich. These are just some of Rich Dad's teachings that will change the way you think about money. Attend this free Rich Dad Education event coming to the Embassy Suites in San Luis Obispo this Thursday for one day only. Reserve your seat now at richdadcalifornia.com or call 1-800-395-4490. That's 1-800-395-4490. Register now and you'll receive a gift just for attending. Call 1-800-395-4490 or visit us at richdadcalifornia.com today.
Additional products and services will be offered for sale.
Just like the Dodgers on the field, your car is a finely tuned machine. Keep your car running Dodger smooth at Black Road Auto. You can save money on all types of car repair, foreign and domestic. With over 20 years of experience in transmission and car repair, Black Road Auto has over 15 acres of classic and hard-to-find auto parts. When you need your car repaired, transmission service, or auto parts, think of Black Road Auto. Black Road Auto, 1500 Black Road, Santa Maria, or call them at 346-2770. That's 346-2770.
626,000 investors.
That's how many people SIPC has helped since 1970.
$15 billion.
That's how much SIPC helped investors to recover.
What is SIPC? The Securities Investor Protection Corporation. An investor's first line of defense in the unlikely event a brokerage firm fails.
SIPC for real people like me.
And me.
And you. Learn more at www.sipc.org.
Bill Benica, Karen Vealey on CalCoastNews.com. Week in Review, and I thank you for joining us, and I thank you, Karen, for being here again today. We have other things we need to talk about because we have other things we just need to talk about, and certainly one of those would be what's going on in the South County Sanitation District. And I'll let you lead off again, madam.
Okay. One of the things, is, as a lot of people know, there was a sewage spill back in 2010. When it happened, it was claimed that it was an act of God and there was no problems. Well, now the water board says this was due to negligence, this is a problem, and there was issues. But meanwhile, we find out that John Wallace, the administrator of the district, didn't have his E&O insurance was canceled in late 2009 and actually went out in January 2010. So he didn't have errors and omissions insurance, which means... Right now what they're planning on doing is passing these fines, a $1.4 million proposed fine, if it goes through, onto the ratepayers. But I have been talking to several attorneys that said there is a chance that these people could sue Wallace for not doing his fiduciary duty, keeping insurance, and go after Wallace to pay for the fines. The other interesting thing is the Sand District has some type of rule that you're not supposed to be able to sue the Sand District after 2 months. No one sued the Sand District in time. There were 40 people that had their houses flooded with sewage. I talked to one man that said it was shooting out of his toilet about 3 feet in the air. Could you imagine?
No, I don't want, and nor do I want to.
So, I mean, there was a lot of damage. It cost a lot of people a lot of money. And there's also the possibility, if they come back with allegations of neglect and malfeasance by Wallace, that the people could also sue Wallace and Wallace Group for the sewage in their homes. And I know that the if anybody's out there is listening from Oceano that had sewage in your home, you can call the water board. Call the local water board. They're wanting to interview people that had sewage in their home.
Now, if they had had insurance, would it have covered those people?
The E&O would have probably covered the fines because it was errors and omissions insurance.
Well, not the fine. I know I would have covered the fine, but what about the people's homes?
Oh, no, I don't think so. But see, if they had sued in time, and one woman told me she went all over town and no one wanted to sue Wallace Group or John Wallace, and she wanted to sue at the time. But I think that if people had known that it was not an act of God and that it was a problem with neglect at the plant, alleged neglect, they're going to have the hearing. They're claiming neglect. Wallace Group is claiming act of God.
I have to say this. I've been around for 60-odd years. I've never seen God do this before. You know, it's not his kind of behavior as far as I can tell. So that's kind of the act of God. Help me up.
And it wasn't a 100-year storm. They do have 100-year storms here. This was not a 100-year storm. This was not the world's worst storm.
This is this I assume is the area in Oceania that flooded?
Yes.
Yeah.
But again, you had sewage coming out of the sewer plant, and they gathered it was about 1.5 million gallons. But they said they're being very conservative. It could be even higher, and they are attempting to get the smart meter data. Also, I was attempting to get it, and I was told by PG&E that the state water board is also trying to get it. That will pin down when this occurred, because right now Wallace Group is claiming they forgot to set their clocks back and they had the wrong time on that. There's actually an hour less of sewage spilled, and they're claiming the reports are wrong because the clock was wrong on their computer. So it's going to be kind of interesting that the smart meter data, for all those that hate smart meters, in this case, it could actually help prove exactly when this spill occurred. And there's one or two smart meters out at the plant. But PG&E has not been real. I've been trying to get it, and they've been, and they're claiming there's privacy rules with their clients, and that because of the privacy rules, they can't give the smart meter data to me.
So let me see. Now we have to go follow this thought if we can. And I'm having a hard time this morning. This is one of those days this afternoon. So here we're going to try to follow this thought. So the idea is that the South Sanitation District screws up, all right? They screw up. Then the sewage spills. Then the Regional Water Quality Control Board comes in. Regional Water Quality Control Board comes in. I've always had trouble with that. RQBCDFG comes in and says, okay, we're going to fine you this much money. So then the fine is passed on to the ratepayers, based on that they were too stupid to elect a different board? Or how does it work? Why are they the ones that suffer in this?
Well, the board that's been elected, which is Mayor Tony Ferrara, Bill Nichols from Grover Beach, and currently Matt Guerrero, but he has not been on the board very long, from Oceano.
But is that the thinking of this?
The board has said, you know, we'll have to raise rates to cover this. And the board, Mayor Farrar and Bill Nichols, I have been to dozens of these meetings, and they Wallace asks for, they always say yes. You know, Wallace Group, we need to do this engineering thing. Yes, we need to do this. Yes.
Well, but put that aside. There has to be some rationale between we screwed up and you have to pay the fine. I don't understand.
And
how
not
that
only
works.
Are they paying the fine, the amount of legal cost. They have Michael Seitz is the attorney that contracts with a bunch of agencies in the area. Last year, I think he made, $200,000, $250,000 in legal fees from the district. Now, to put that in this year, they're saying it's going to be $295,000, almost $300,000 in legal bills alone. To put this into perspective, in Paso Robles, the plants are very similar. In Paso Robles, they spend about $22,000 a year in legal fees, and that includes collections. And so that's the other bill they're going to have. When this is all over, they may have almost as much money going out in legal fees as they do in a fine. And those are getting, that's causing rates to go up. The cost of running the plant, it just keeps getting higher and higher and higher.
I'm disturbed.
You're disturbed.
I'm disturbed. Okay, here we have another thing that's going on. It's really it's a phenomenon that's happening on the East Coast and the West Coast, and that's the shark business. And so there's a shark sign in Pismo, but there's been other shark sightings. There's been kayaks chewed on. There's been all kinds of stuff. And then the weird part of it is, and one of the things they're saying is because we have more seals. You know, the seals are just starting to overpopulate every place. And so they had a story yesterday on CNN that down in San Diego, I think it was, that they, at La Jolla Beach in San Diego, they blocked most of the beach off and the pool for the kids. This sounds really strange, but they have to actually rope the pool off, and the kids get to swim in one little third of it, and the seals get to occupy the other part of it when they're having babies. It's a just absurd thing. And if you've been to Monterey, which I've said, and you see the seal problem they have up there, you go down to Port San Luis. Yeah. You know, it's starting to get big there. Well, that's where the more of the sharks are here.
I read in some newspaper about a year ago that they're typically in the California coastline, there's about 40,000 seals. Right now, we're up to about 400,000. And it's amazing that somebody sees a sick seal, save the seal. And they're... A lot of the fishermen are saying the seals are really taking the fish, you know, really disturbing the whole ecosystem.
Yep.
And there just aren't the fish. There used to be over 100 fishermen that made a living out at Port San Luis. I think there's about 15 left.
Wow. And Morro Bay's probably in the same shape, I think, yeah. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, so we got pumas, we got sharks, we got, you know, things you want to stay away from, and they seem to be getting more active.
And one interesting thing here is this allegation they're going to turn off healthy families and stop healthy families, which is huge because...
Wait. What are they going to do? What's healthy families?
Healthy families is an insurance program for people that fall between, you know, more of a middle income or lower income, but it's not for... it's for people that can't have Medicare or Medicaid for their children. So they have this healthy family. They pay somewhat of a premium. I think some people do get it free. But the interesting thing is they're saying almost, I think it's about 900,000 children are not going to be insured. Now, I'm as part of the budget. But now they're saying if Jerry Brown's tax plan passes, we're going to go ahead and take this back. That you're hearing allegations, well, this is all a scare tactic to make sure that the tax plan is implemented.
Could be. And yet, we are foolish enough to say, let's put this flipping train in the middle of the valley. And it's like it defies the imagination that California can be this stupid. Then, we're back to, I was yesterday lamenting the fact, and I'll do it till people just say, I'm not going to listen anymore, Bill, because I'm tired of your crying about that, is, you know, the fact that the Indian casinos can now build casinos off reservation, and the state of California just refuses to build a casino. It's absurd. It's completely nuts to just say, well, the Native Americans have sovereign rights over the property they're on, so therefore if they do that, well, what can we do about it, you know? It's kind of like, wait a minute. What? How stupid do you have to be to have this kind of financial problem in this state and just ignore it? It makes no sense. The state, I guess, does the state get a certain amount of money from the Indian casinos or nothing?
I don't think so.
I don't think they get anything.
No.
Well, it's just stupidity is what it is. I mean, in Atlantic City, at least the state, New Jersey, you know, gets it.
Yeah.
And obviously in Las Vegas. Well, the whole thing here is there's something wrong with this. I'm sorry. There's just the thinking is all screwed up. And the place you see it most is Lake Tahoe, where on one side of the street you can gamble, on the other side of the street you can't. It's like, what are you doing? Are you completely out of your mind? Anyhow, that's my feeling. I'm sticking to it right there. I don't get it. I do not get it. All right. Other things are going on. We had Well, here's an interesting article you had about Medi-Cal facing an expensive boom. Everything that has to do with baby boomers is facing an expensive everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just exploding off the map. And the funny part about it is not funny, but the strange part about it is it's kind of like everybody knew this was coming. You know, we knew it was coming as baby boomers. You know, it was obviously going to happen. And I guess maybe we took it for granted that whatever was supposed to be in place would be in place without a problem, but not comprehending the fact that for years and years, anything that has to do with Medicare and Social Security have been raided by everybody, you know, and so it's not there. Or it will not be there at some point. So I don't know how we turn that around either. I don't have a guess. I don't think anybody else has a guess. I don't care how many economists you talk to or whatever. They don't really know what they're going to do. It's like, okay, well, we had money, but we don't now. Okay, now what? And the states are doing the same thing. San Bernardino declared bankruptcy here yesterday,
yes.
Two days ago.
It's amazing. But there's supposed to be some corruption in that one. They're claiming there was...
It's San Bernardino, you know. There's only so many people moving into San Bernardino as opposed to those moving out. Right? That's just the way it is. All right. Let's see what else we got that we should talk about this week. We had our usual murders and robberies and all that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, we did have two people burned in a fire in a Poma House fire, which was sad.
Yes.
Luckily, we don't have a lot of house fires where there's damage. Although, let me say this is interesting. Here they had the fire in, Santa Maria, the house in Santa Maria that caught fire because of 4th of July fireworks.
Okay.
Okay, and they had the bottle rockets or whatever land on the roof, and that's the age-old story about bottle rockets landing on the roof. The thing I find fascinating, and I really mean this, I don't get it. I understand there's cleanup involved, and I accept that, and you put that in your budget or something. I don't know what you do, but you figure it out. But why the beach cities refuse to let people do fireworks, and I don't mean, let's just say the safe and sane stuff without the bottle rockets. Why the beach cities refuse to let people be on the beach with these things is absurd to me. It's the most logical place to be. You have a beach and you have an ocean. You know, and it's nothing's going to burn. There's nothing to burn if you're using the safe and sane fireworks. And yet, you know, they're allowed almost nowhere where there's a beach. And so I don't get that. I really kind of don't get it. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
I mean, why?
Because trees are...
Yeah, trees are flammable.
Yeah.
Houses are flammable. I mean, you're in the middle of Santa Maria and you start setting off fireworks. But it just seems to me it doesn't make sense that we don't let people do it at the beach. But we don't, so there's nothing else to say about it except we just don't. Charles Lynch is getting help with his appeal, and I think we should just mention this because this, of course, was from his marijuana dispensary in Morro Bay. And so the Oakland-based Americans for Safe Access, or ASA, filed a friend of the court brief. And so how much is this going to help this guy?
It depends if the court accepts it. If the court accepts it as information on marijuana, then it could help the guy. His appeal, I think, we should know by the end of the winter or spring. It will probably go on about another year, the appeal process. Sometimes it's very quick, and sometimes it's very, very slow.
Well, and the ASA has filed a lawsuit against the Obama administration to reclassify medical marijuana and now considered a Schedule I drug and to say medical marijuana is okay. But at this point, we do not have the cooperation of the federal government, nor does any state that has medical marijuana laws or passed medical marijuana laws. There's no one that has the support of the federal government, and the federal government has decided that the federal government trumps states' rights in this particular case.
Yeah.
And actually, in some other particular cases that are sort of shocking to me, but okay, that's what's going on.
And the interesting thing here is the federal government has come out with statements, we're just going after those that are doing fraudulent behavior, those that are making, you know, they're not following the state law. But there are others that say they're going after everything in certain towns. So it's hard to, there's a lot of discrepancies here.
You know what? I owe us a visit with Sheriff Parkinson, and because during his campaign, he said, you know what? I want to sort this out. I want to know exactly what we need to know of what we can and cannot do.
I want to tell you something about Sheriff Parkinson.
Uh-huh.
This is kind of interesting. When we were covering, before Sheriff Parkinson was in, we were covering the Sheriff's Department. It was back when Rob Bren was alive. And Rob Bren was using government equipment to try to help Sheriff Parkinson get elected. They were friends. Dan called him up and said, you know, you're sending things out on your government computer using this, 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 and this. And Rob Bren said, you report this, and you're not going to have access to the police department or the sheriff's department anymore. He was blunt about it. Well, Parkinson gets in. Adam Hill gets in. Well, Adam Hill is already in, office. So Adam Hill sends out an email telling someone I know that if you don't want to have problems with Sheriff Parkinson also, he won't talk to you like he doesn't talk to Cal Coast News, and you'll have trouble with Sheriff's Department. So I called Tony Coppola a couple days ago, and I like Tony. I think that I was just so happy they got Tony in there. And I called him to ask him a question. He goes, Karen, I can't answer your questions. The Sheriff's Department has a policy of not responding to anybody that works for Cal Coast News. Now, is that astounding? I said, you've got an actual policy that you cannot respond and talk to Cal Coast News? There's laws against that. It's case law. There have been numerous newspapers and different agencies that have sued on behalf of this, because what it does is, if you write about a government body truthfully in a negative way and they get angry at you because you're covering them and they no longer give you access, that takes away the watchdog function of the media. But I just found this astounding.
Wow.
that Sheriff Parkinson has put this rule in, you know, especially since he's, you know, the sheriff and he's not following the law here.
Let's remind people that we can you can listen to calcoastnews.com weekdays with me. I do a report on whatever's up there, and then we'll get together next Friday again, you and I, the most popular woman in the world, and Karen.
You're still talking to me.
I am. I have no problem with it. Anyway, but I know I thank you for coming today and taking the time, and have a good week. And we'll, if something breaks during the week, we'll always have it on. And if not, we'll be together again next Friday.
Sounds good.
Thank you, madam.
News. I'm Pam Coulter. Another Syrian town under attack. Activists say it was a massacre by regime forces that killed more than 220 people in Tremsa. So far, UN observers have been unable to get there, but there is condemnation in Washington.
I'm Cammie McCormick in Washington. In a statement, Secretary of State Clinton says she is outraged to learn of another massacre committed by the Syrian regime. She says credible reports indicate the attack was carried out by artillery, tanks, and helicopters. Indisputable evidence, she says, that the regime deliberately murdered innocent civilians. She also steps up the pressure on the UN Security Council, saying history will judge its members. members.
Envoy Kofi Annan urged the UN Security Council for a response as well, saying Syria must learn there are consequences. Polls show it's a close presidential race, and both sides are trading accusations of outsourcing jobs. The Obama campaign says Republican Mitt Romney cost Americans jobs while he ran Bain Capital. CBS's Wyatt Andrews.
Romney left in February of 1999 to run the Salt Lake City Olympics. And the Romney campaign is heatedly arguing that after February 1999, any jobs that went overseas are not on Romney's watch.
Mitt Romney accuses the president of outsourcing jobs with federal stimulus money that went overseas, a charge refuted by companies contacted by CBS News. In a call to Wall Street analysts today, J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon revealed the bank's London trading losses had nearly tripled to just under $6 billion.
We're not making light of this error, but we do think it's an isolated event.
But news that the bank had second quarter profits of $5 billion sent its stock price up. It was a good day for Wall Street, the Dow ending the day over 200 points up. Analyst Marilyn Cohen.
The market was grotesquely oversold, so we were bound to have some kind of rally.
NASDAQ up 42. Kidnapping and child endangerment charges filed in Ohio.
Fairfield County, Ohio Sheriff Dave Palin says Russell Terry and Jamie Curnell admit they locked their four-year-old daughter in a wire mesh cage around her bed for 3 months. Deputies found the cage in a filthy house responding to a domestic violence call.
They were concerned with the child getting up at night, so they wanted to make sure the child didn't get up at night. And so this was their remedy.
The parents are charged with kidnapping and child endangerment. Greg Saber for CBS News, Cleveland.
A big solar flare is expected to hit the Earth sometime tomorrow morning. It's called an X-class solar flare, one of the most powerful produced by the sun this year. It's capable of disrupting satellites and electric power. This is CBS News.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner from Quicken Loans. Today's interest rates are the lowest that we've seen in generations. The rate today on a 30-year fixed mortgage is an amazing 3.75%. APR 3.98%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN. That's 800-QUICKEN. We'll help you keep more of that hard-earned money in your pocket where it belongs. Maybe that's why for the second year in a row now, J.D. Power & Associates rank Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination in the nation. Here are some of the reasons why. We close many of our loans in 30 days or less, and we provide you with industry-leading online apps designed to guide you through the loan process with speed and ease. Again, today's amazingly low rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage is 3.75%, APR 3.98%. So give us a call today at 800-QUICKEN. That's 800-QUICKEN, or visit us at quickenloans.com and find out for yourself why we're engineered to amaze.
For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Call us for cost information. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
An arrest close to home in the murder of an American woman in London.
Scotland Yard says billionaire Hans Rausing has been arrested on suspicion of murdering his American wife Eva in their $100 million London mansion. Earlier this week, he was charged with possession of a Class A drug. When police went to their home, they found his wife. She could have been dead for a week. Police are waiting for toxicology test results. Her mother says she had a dangerous heart condition. The couple's drug problem surfaced 4 years ago when Eva Rausing was found with heroin and crack cocaine at a U.S. embassy function. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
You can still look into your crystal ball in Alexandria, Louisiana. A federal judge has struck down a city ordinance banning fortune-telling, palm reading, astrology, and similar activities, calling it unconstitutional. Fortune-teller Rachel Adams sued the city after a police officer issued her a summons last year. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
Hey everybody, Jay Farner here from Quicken Loans. Right now, Quicken Loans is proud to offer you our exclusive Yorgage, a mortgage that's custom fit for you. It's a fixed rate home loan that allows you to select a term that works best for your individual needs, anywhere from 8 to 29 years. The rate today on our 8-year fixed Yorgage is an amazing 2.875%, APR 3.5%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN. We'll help you keep more of that hard-earned money in your pocket where it belongs. Maybe that's why for the second year in a row now, J.D. Power & Associates ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination in the nation. It's really this simple. I believe there's never been a more perfect time to refinance or purchase than right now. Again, the rate today on an 8-year fixed mortgage is an amazing 2.875%, APR 3.5%. So give us a call today at 800-QUICKEN. That's 800-QUICKEN, or visit us at quickenloans.com.
For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Other restrictions may apply. Call us for cost information. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
On the road of experience, I'm trying to find my own way. Sometimes I wish that I could fly away.
How does a little shoe store like Mike's and the Slow Promenade seem so big? They start by taking assortment to a new level. Not just any assortment, but the brands people really want and the styles people really love. Mike, Annie, Shu Shun, and their entire crew at Mike's really know their stuff, and they're happy to make it work for you. The right people, in the right place, all the time. You'll like Mike's and find what you're looking for in men's and women's shoes. Every time you hear this ad, you're just one pair away from the perfect number of shoes. Mike's Shoes at Southside Promenade.
Want to improve office morale around the break room? Are you tired of hearing employees grumble about bad office coffee? There's an easy solution to this. Invite Slow Roasted Coffee's office service into your business. They're your local coffee company that features fair trade certified organically grown coffees roasted daily and delivered fresh to you so you can taste the difference. For 24 years now, this locally owned and operated family business has been serving the Central Coast. Slow Roasted Coffee believes customer service really does matter, which is why they provide 24-hour customer care. Slow Roasted Coffee's office service is perfect for the workplace as well as restaurants and lodging facilities. You'll never have a bitter cup of coffee again. Consistency, freshness, and convenience is what you'll enjoy when you call Slow Roasted Coffee's office service. Call them at 528-7317. That's 528-7317. Coffee, the original energy drink.
There is an energy drink right there, Coffo. And Slow Roasted. We have Slow Roasted Coffee in our coverage right here. All right, now, let's talk about what's going on at Spencer's Fresh Markets. I'm Bill Benica, by the way. This is 1340 KYNS and a new hour and everything. I should say that. And let me tell you what's happening at John Spencer's. For $1.99, you get your choice this weekend of fresh boneless, skinless chicken breast, fresh ground beef, Prairie Fresh Natural Pork spare ribs, and Prairie Fresh Natural Pork sirloin chops. Chop. Which is good. And then you say, but Bill, what if I want some spaghetti? Okay. Francesco Rinaldi pasta sauce, 2 for $3, and IGA spaghetti, 2 for $5. Don't forget they're an IGA store, so you get a lot of store brand stuff, and you save yourself a ton of dough, and it's just the same as the other stuff. Come on, get a clue. All right, and then they have just all kinds of wonderful meats, and they got great produce, you know, the farmer's market inside. They got jumbo cantaloupe, 2 for $3. They got sweet nectarines, 2 pounds for $1. And then they have the delightful bakery. They have Frank Bouget cakes. They have fresh breads. They have all of those things. And so you're welcome to stop by Spencer's Fresh Markets and enjoy all of those wonderful things. Spencer's in 5 locations on the Central Coast, at Atascadero, Morro Bay, Arroyo Grande, Santa Maria, and San Luis Obispo. I came across something. This is really weird. I just happened to be out there on the Internet. You know how you go out there. And I was looking around, and I came across drumline music, which I have to tell you the truth, except in movies I'd never heard of. So I'm going to test drive one, all right? Just a second. Let me get this kind of set up for you. All right, here we go. We're going to test drive a drumline thing. See what it sounds like.
Anybody know who this guy is?
No, we haven't got any reports. No,
Excuse me, what was that?
Bribe. Yeah.
Is that it?
May be careful for
surveillance. No, that's too weird. That was weird. I'm not doing that one. I don't want to have to start with talking. It's supposed to be a drumline, for God's sake. Let's try this one. What was that? What kind of bogus thing is this? I thought it was supposed to be drumline music. That doesn't sound like drumline music to me. That doesn't even come close to drumline music. Anyway, You're with Bill Talk, his chief friends and neighbors. Now we're going to have a special guest in the studio. His name is Chris Galloway. Hi, Chris. Yeah, glad you're here.
Hello, hello.
How are you, man?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. Well, Chris is, let me tell you what, we're going to talk to Chris about two different things. First, we'll do a little coffee stuff, because Chris is the owner of Slow Roasted Coffee. We can find out what's going on in the coffee world. And then Chris also is an instructor. Do I call it a survival school instructor?
I would prefer wilderness skills, sounds better.
Wilderness skills. Okay, that's good. That's what they should have called it when I was in the service, you know what I mean? Because there wasn't really any survival involved. They just wanted to catch him pushing a POW camp. All right, we'll get to that. Let's talk about Slow Roast Coffee, though, because you and the Galloway family has been in Slow Roast Coffee for
26 years.
26 years now?
Yes.
How's that cool?
Oh, it's very nice.
It's a lot of hard work. Boy, I want you to know, this Galloway family has worked and worked and worked, and so Chris is involved, Julie, his sister's involved now, and her husband,
Paul. Yes.
And then you still have two roasters?
We have two roasters, and we have about four or five other employees as well. My son is working there as well, so we have the third generation.
Wow.
On premises, which
wow.
We're very happy about.
Yeah, Norm Galloway, who started out there, he's retired and in the valley, because he worked for was it PG&E that he worked for?
He worked for Southern California.
Southern California, yeah, and he worked over in the valley, right?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So that's his home stomping ground, but he was over here for years and years and years doing Slow Roasted Coffee. And the other thing that's really kind of cool about it is, and I always admired the man for it. I got to tell you honestly, and I admire you and Julie for continuing this tradition is of staying in Los Osos, you know, because I said this on the air before, it would save you a lot of costs if you could be nearer the freeway than you are, you know.
True.
So
true.
As far as your loyalty to Los Osos, I think that's really just spectacular.
It's been a great community to work in. We're very thankful to be where we're at.
Now, you are now selling coffee, though, out of the shop, correct?
Correct, yes. We have had a retail license for a while, but haven't really pushed that as being a big side of the business. So we are advertising that. We're opening up the front. We'll be selling coffee items here pretty soon. We're working on that. And right now we're opening it up so customers can come in, purchase the coffee from us directly, get to talk to the roasters, get to talk to us. And we're also offering free coffee as they come in. So they can get a cup, try the coffee, find something they might like that's a little different than what they're currently trying, and hopefully.
Do you know? I don't want to put you on the spot here because this would be tough. Nancy and I worked for you guys for 10, 11 years.
Oh gosh!
But
yes.
I would have not known the answer to this if somebody had asked me. Do you know how many kinds of coffee you have?
Like right now, it's well.
Regular coffee. How many regular coffees do you think?
Regular coffees, I would say probably about 40 to 47 regular coffees.
And then flavored.
Right around the same, a little over 50. So overall, we have about 112 different varieties of coffee between regular and decaf, flavored and non-flavored coffee.
Now, we could spend the whole hour on coffee, mm-hmm. but I don't want to do that. I want to get to this other thing with you. But, you know, what people need to understand something about Slow Roasted Coffee is that, you know, there's lots of different quality of beans that can be purchased. They can do an advertisement on TV and say, you know, the other guys buy that and all that kind of stuff. It's usually what you see on TV is usually the opposite of what reality is when it comes to coffee.
Truly.
You know, the big people that are roasting coffee, you know, in big batches, the whole way that they do it, the way that it comes out, the way that you taste it, the way of everything is not, I would say this to you, it's not really coffee to me. You know, I mean, you'd get a cup of slow roll French roast, let me tell you, you've climbed a mountain right there. It's just absolutely excellent coffee. And I've said this to you also on the air. Nancy and I used to go to the coffee conventions up in San Francisco.
Yes.
You know, and we went at least every other year, so we went at least five times. And only one time did we ever taste some coffee that we thought was really pretty good. And it was a couple of guys, I think was either out of Oregon or Santa Cruz. And
but
try to imagine you have 1,000 coffee vendors in a building. Now you can't drink all of it, you know. But you know what they do is they had special spittoons, kind of. I guess is what you
yes.
call them. You know, so you could taste it. But even if when you're tasting and just spitting out coffee, when you've done about 30 of those. Let me tell you, you're starting to head out there, you know, in outer space. But we would. I was absolutely stupefied at the price that people were getting for some of those coffees and how crappy they were. They just were, but not good. And I don't say this because I work for you guys, but having worked for you guys and then having gone and tasted other coffees, it became so evident to Nancy and I that we were like, you know, we sort of hit pay dirt. We get to represent a really great product. You know what I mean?
Well, thank you very much.
Well, no, I mean that. I say that sincerely. You know, we still drink Slow Roasted Coffee. You know, I just, that's how we are. And we still give Slow Roasted Coffee away as gifts.
Great.
All right, let's talk about some other things besides Slow Roasted Cup of Joe. We're going to talk about wilderness survival. And Chris is the guy that I've mentioned on the air many times that I said, in case the end times come, you know, and things are bad, I expect him to wait in Los Osos till I get there, and then we head out to wherever we're going.
Off we go.
Off we go. Because my survival skills leave a lot to be desired. My survival skills leave a lot to be desired. So now, how did you first start getting, because you've done this a long time.
21 years now.
I was saying, wow.
I found a school that was based in New Jersey, and they had a satellite school. They would come out once a year up in Boulder Creek near Santa Cruz. I went to the school there for a week and then wound up going back to New Jersey for a few years to the school there, and it was just something I was very interested in. I always had been. I liked going out, still do, love going out into nature. But, you know, it's like anything else, you got to have the skills to keep yourself around in any environment you're at. So I just kept following through with that, found an instructor who was making bows and arrows, and I met him up in San Rafael, and he happened to live in Atascadero. So I became his apprentice, and through being his apprentice, I was able to go to other wilderness survival schools in Idaho and Arizona, New Jersey, and go to them as an apprentice instructor, and that enabled me to learn a lot more from the other instructors, been great.
That's cool. Now, so if I had to say, is there, I can't imagine there's a particular emphasis that you're trying to get through to people. There's a whole lot of skills I imagine you're trying to come together and get people to understand. How long, so you have, tell us where this, you're going to be an instructor next week, and where's that?
That'll be up in Mount Shasta. It's for the Headwaters School. It's the total combined length of the classes I'll be teaching is 10 days. We teach full wilderness survival from trapping, hut making, plant identification, plant usage, bow and arrow production, pretty much everything under the sun. They build huts. They live, the kids and adults that we teach live in the huts for that time. Everything's an outdoor school. We teach hunting techniques, water purification techniques, and it really is a great class. There's 22 Miwok-style cedar bark huts within the area, and it's just a beautiful place to be. And for the 10 days, we get to stay out in the woods and play and do a lot of really fun things.
Tell me the name of the school again.
It is Headwaters Outdoor School.
Now, is there on the, are they on the Internet?
They are on the Internet,
HeadwatersOutdoor.com or something?
HWOS is the abbreviation for
H-W-O-S.
It, and you can find it on the Internet and has some really beautiful pictures.
Can people, let's say today we have inspired somebody to go to a wilderness school, can they sign up for next week?
They may be able to. I do know that this, actually, I received a call a couple of days ago from the owner, and the class size has actually doubled, so now we're in charge of 80 students. It'll be the most we've ever taught in a 10-day course. So there, I think there may still be room available. I'm sure there's at least one or two trees that are free you can sleep under. We'll get you in there.
There's a tree for everybody.
Truly.
By God. Well, that's very interesting. You know, we, and again, I did go through survival school and the service before going to Vietnam. But we, you know, we're up in the mountains. Well, here's the odd part of it. We were in the mountains up by Mount Palomar above San Diego.
Okay.
And it was run by, try to imagine this, the Submarine Warfare School. Now, ask me why. There's no. We all asked, why is it run by the... Oh, I don't know. They're the ones that run it. Okay. So the problem was, it was the first time it snowed in the San Diego Mountains in 14 years.
Perfect. No better
situation. No better place in the whole world. So it was just hideous. I mean, we had nothing but a shirt and a pair of pants and you know, utilities and boots. And so we spent most of the time, because they said, okay, well, we got to keep these guys alive because it was freezing out. We most of the time just stood around fires. There wasn't anything else to do, you know, so it was like just try to stay alive. Now, what they did do was if Here's what happened. Somebody turned over a big log, and some mice ran out. Two mice ran out from underneath it, so they just stepped on them, and they were each given a quarter piece of bologna for that because we weren't eating. You know, we didn't eat for 5 days. We didn't eat, and then what they did was they dropped some cans of corned beef in, like you'd buy in the store, and each person got a tablespoon of corned beef. So I was like, that was worth it. But like I say, it wasn't really, we didn't really learn, but we didn't learn skills of any kind. We didn't learn to identify plants. You know, they did tell us if you get wounded, let the maggots take care of the wound because they'll keep it clean. Eat the maggots because they got protein in them.
True.
We all had to down some charcoal. Just to show you that you can, and in case you had diarrhea, it would help with that.
Yes.
Of course, we had no food, so of course we had no diarrhea, but then we all got to chomp on some charcoal. So it was really kind of a silly school in its own way, but again, like I say, the end result was to have you eventually get captured by the bad guys and be put in a POW camp. They weren't really worried about your survival. They were more concerned about that part of it. Anyhow, but this is a entirely different thing than you're doing. I mean, you're talking about real honest-to-gosh skills, and so... What were the things that you found as you went along that were just seemed so fascinating to you? Because I'm sure it must be very fascinating.
It really is. I guess the first thing was how much there is actually to learn. You know, usually you get to a point and you think, boy, I sure know a lot, and then you'll meet somebody and they make you realize, wow, I still have a lot to learn. And I think that is a big thing. It's just so much there is to learn. And a lot of it we have in the gray matter. It's ancestral memories, you know, fire by friction, making huts. Being in the woods is something that's programmed into our DNA. It's just through the classes that we teach, the courses we have, it's bringing out that knowledge or relearning the knowledge that you have inside you already. And the thing about this... The word survival I try and stay away from. I like wilderness skills because we're all survivalists at some point. I was able to drive to the studio here, so that in some respects makes me a driving survivalist. That's why I believe that the word's overused. It's wilderness skills, and it's skills that everybody has had at one point, or we wouldn't be there. Our ancestors lived this way.
How interesting. That's
so
a good point.
I think that's really the retrospect of where it comes down to. It's something everybody... can do. I can make fire by friction. I can rub sticks together and make fire. And that just seems amazing. But anybody can do it. I'm not any more special than any other person. It's just the knowledge that I have gives me the ability to do these things.
Now, for those of us that were in Boy Scouts, you know, we were introduced to some of this, you know, with flint and steel and doing the bow type
bow
thing,
drill,
and
yes.
Bow drill to make fire. And so we were, you know, at least introduced to that a little bit. But again, the skills that we learned were mostly. I went as in the Boy Scouts of New Jersey, where the badge of honor was that you had a little badge that said 10 below zero because you went on the weekend encampment and it was 10 below zero,
wow.
And it was hideous. And so we again, the survival was seeing how far you could stand into a fire without actually combusting yourself. You know what I mean? Because it was just awful.
Oh.
But anyway. It's like, so, you know, the stuff that we did learn in Scouts, though, I mean, we learned a little stuff, you know, we built lean-tos and whatnot, but, you know, again, it's not really a Boy Scout-type operation that you're talking about, and I think we need to sort of clarify that this is a whole other thing. The idea of this is that you are out in the middle of nowhere, and you are going to be able to survive with just
yes.
you.
Very much so, and it's, their skills, like I said, anybody can do, really, and it's... What the skills enable you, it gives you a sense of comfort when you're in the wilderness. Because a lot of people, they get out there and they could be 200-300 yards from the road, and it just feels like in the depths of woods. But really, and you get much farther out than that, and you don't know where the road is, a lot of people will start to kind of tense up a little bit. What happens if I hurt myself? And that alone will stop them from discovering what's over the next rise, what's behind the tree, is that simple fear. And what the knowledge gives you is just a sense of comfort knowing, okay, you know, if I hurt my leg or if it gets dark, I have the knowledge to build a hut, to make fire, to make it so that I will be here tomorrow morning when the sun rises and I can start my day again. It just really is a sense of comfort that anyone can obtain that the things you see around you, such as maybe like a stinging nettle plant. Everybody I know hates stinging nettle. They curse the day it was ever brought onto the planet. Well, once you realize that stinging nettle itself, once dried, makes fantastic cordage, which is string or rope. We teach how to make cordage with that. Another thing is it's considered or classified as a superfood because stinging nettle, the young green shoots, once picked and sautéed up, has protein in it.
Wow.
And it's a great food that alone that'll keep you alive. So it's the little things like that that bring a sense of comfort when you're in the middle of nowhere.
All right, we're going to take a break. When I come back, my guest is Chris Galloway. And when we come back, I'm a meat eater, so we got to find out where we go with that.
It's no secret that in today's world, the kitchen is the center of the home. That's where everybody hangs out.
Good food, good wine, good friends, it all begins and ends right there in the kitchen.
That's right, Kel. And to help get it started, Pacific Coast Kitchen and Bath is cranking up our annual summer kitchen sink and faucet sale.
Sounds exciting. What's the deal this year?
It's all about big savings. Everybody's looking for a great deal, and we've got them covered. Right now, we've got all of our top brands like Growy Faucets, Roll Fire Clay Sinks, and Blanco Stainless Steel Sinks all on sale for up to 40% off.
Wow, that's amazing.
If folks are remodeling their kitchen, this is their chance to get some of our best products at our very best prices.
Beautiful sinks, fabulous faucets, all on sale. Dad, you're the best.
Like you said, Kel, it all starts and ends right there in the kitchen.
It's on now, but the sale ends July 14th. Save up to 40% at Pacific Coast Kitchen and Bath, behind Trader Joe's.
Working harder but not getting ahead? The rich get richer no matter which way the economy is headed because today's times are filled with opportunity. If you understand the new rules of money, you need to attend a free Rich Dad Education Workshop coming to San Luis Obispo. Based on the teachings from the best-selling book Rich Dad Poor Dad, this totally free two-hour event will show you how to survive and build security during these hard economic times. We teach why your house is not an asset, why you may not want to diversify, why you may not want to invest in 401ks or mutual funds, why saving money will never make you rich. These are just some of Rich Dad's teachings that will change the way you think about money. Attend this free Rich Dad Education event coming to the Embassy Suites in San Luis Obispo this Thursday for one day only. Reserve your seat now at richdadcalifornia.com or call 1-800-395-4490. That's 1-800-395-4490. Register now and you'll receive a gift just for attending. Call 1-800-395-4490 or visit us at richdadcalifornia.com today.
Additional products and services will be offered for sale.
All right, we're back, and I have Chris Galloway as my guest today. And I'm excited to do so. Chris is one of the owners of Slow Roasted Coffee, and it's always been a pleasure to know Chris and work. We didn't get to work together much. We were off in one direction, and Chris was at the shop, but we certainly had a good time working for him, I'll say that. And so we're learning about wilderness survival, and so we've talked about. So here, this is the subject we just touched on before we took the break, was eating. You know, you're out there, because that's obviously one of the most important things you're going to think about when you're out in the middle of nowhere, is eating. Well, there's two things. Let's go with eating. People can go quite a while without eating. You know,
they can go quite a while
without eating. But you can't go all that long without water.
Generally, 3 days is dependent on the weather and your situation. That's the most you really want to go.
So you're out in the middle of nowhere. What do you do for water?
Water, basically what you need to watch out for, a lot of the microorganisms that were within the water, Girardia, Cryptosporium, the types of things that can really make you sick. I actually had Girardia for a while, and I was just very ill.
Wow.
For quite a long time. And that's made me very, I pay a lot more attention to where that comes from. So if I'm in the woods and I'm looking for water, I may try and find a seep somewhere coming out of the earth. Maybe redwoods is a good indicator plant. Willow trees are good indicators. There's water around close. So at the base or near redwoods, you can often find water dripping or running, and it'll follow that to the source where it's coming out of the earth itself. And that water has been filtered through the earth, so as it exits the earth, that is pure water, and that would be the drinking source.
Uh-huh.
There are quite a few different ways to get drinking water, even in the morning. If it's a morning that's has a lot of dew, you can take a bandana, a T-shirt, wipe the water off of the plants that have water on them, and wring that out into your mouth. There's a lot of different ways to get water. It's just another way is to keep your ears open, because often you can hear it.
Really?
And that will bring you to it. And water has a smell as well. But if you come across running water, you really want to boil it. That is the That is number one. Boil it to kill whatever might be in it. But the reality is, if you're in a survival situation, your first goal at that point is to be rescued, is to get out of that situation.
Right.
So if it's a matter of you've gone long enough to your body's starting to dehydrate and you need that water, you drink that water because your first priority is staying alive. The Girardia or that type of thing will probably kick in 3 to 4 days later. So you have about 72 hours to be rescued, and then let the doctors deal with the Girardia after that, because you're alive and that's what matters.
As long as, unlike 127 hours, you've told someone where you're going.
Please. Yeah. That is, you know, that's a big thing. And in the beginning when I was going out, I, you know, the lone guy in the woods, you kind of get that genre or that feeling after you go to these wilderness skills, but then you realize, you know, you're just an ankle twist away from death at times. So it is always a great idea to let someone, a responsible person, tell them where you're going to be, how long you're going to be, call, give them a certain time that you'll be returning from your trip. And on top of that as well, because I also do a lot of tracking, is take some aluminum foil and the boots or shoes or whatever you plan on wearing on your trek, put the aluminum foil on some carpet, and then step onto the aluminum foil with those same shoes and leave that aluminum foil in your car. Because if search and rescue reaches the area, gets the car, and is able to open your car, which they will, that aluminum foil will give the trackers your boot print or footprint to follow, and that often is the start of your rescue. And that's a big thing to do, is to leave that boot print, because when the trackers get there, they're going to start hitting the ground and searching for your tracks visually and along with the dogs, and then from then on, they're going to make a beeline.
I never even thought about people tracking you if you're lost the way. I figured, you know, if the helicopter doesn't see you, you're done.
In some cases, yeah, it is true. But actually, man tracking or even animal tracking, a lot of the schools I've gone to have focused on that, and we've spent days doing that in different areas. And it's actually quite fun because we can set up scenarios where someone will run out, and their scenario is maybe they are trying to get away from someone. They might be semi-dehydrated, and they're fumbling around. And once you find the tracks, you're supposed to decipher from the tracks what's going on with this person. And it's amazing how close you can actually come to by looking at the tracks, wondering, realizing, you know, they stepped this way, they motioned this way, they lifted their head to the right, they must have seen something over there because the right side of the foot imprints is deeper on the right side as opposed to the left side of the foot imprint. So that type of thing, it really is a lot of fun tracking people and animals.
When you say, and this is interesting, Chris, when you say, well, we all have this in our DNA, you know, this is back from when we were, you know, had hair all over us and walked around the woods, and I understand that. I do understand that. So obviously, if you and I were stuck in the woods right now, you would have obviously a lot more ability to do anything than I would. But are you saying that as you hone these skills, that you can sort of reacquire these skills? Is that what basically you're doing when you do this?
I think so. Definitely, if someone is left in the woods, and there's a lot of instances, and I love survival stories, magazine stories, anything about someone who survived in the woods, whether they made it or not, very interesting to read about that because you can see what people will do. We are amazing creatures, and we know we need shelter, we need to cover our body, and even the people who don't have skills or maybe have read it or heard about maybe something called the lean-to or something,
right.
They actually are able, in that stressful situation, to go back into that gray matter and pull up those things that they've heard from a while back.
Right.
And it may be something that they just saw, or their mind starts kicking in, and it actually starts to make sense to them. This is what I need to do. And I think it partially, as you watch that unfold, you can see, well, these people, they really do have an idea of what needs to be done. It's just the techniques of certain directions to face your shelter. It's the minute things that they need to be taught generally,
right,
to make their experience more enjoyable.
Now, tell me where I get my hamburger, because I'm a meat eater, so I don't mind eating a plant or two. But is there, are you going to teach people how to catch animals?
I actually specialize in traps. That's one of my things. I love trapping. I love making traps. And they can be through deadfalls, which is something heavy, a rock, a log, or something falls on the animal. And then you collect the animal. Snares, where there is some way that you have your cordage on the ground, and as the animal triggers the trap, it either snares them so that you're able then to come collect them. So a lot of different ways to trap animals. And it really is a lot of fun. And I practice it a lot, and I tell my students as well, you know, you're going to learn trapping. It's vital to staying alive in the woods because we need to eat meat. You have to have protein.
Right.
And I tell them, and I teach kids as well, I make sure that they are on the same level because trapping is not a game. It's you are responsible for the traps you set. And what I do, I have to show them the lethal portion of the trap, but then they need to practice that trap. And if it's lethal, you can't practice it safely. So, like for deadfalls where a rock would fall and squish an animal or something, back in the past, one of the traps is called a figure four trap, and that would hold a rock. The animal would touch one of the sticks, and the sticks are just notched together, so they fall apart, and the rock lands on the animal. Well, I would set the figure four up with a clothes basket, and then I would put a toy on the end for my cat. So my cat would go over. He would hit the trigger, and then the clothes basket would land and close my cat. And it was a way for me to practice without hurting any animals.
Oh,
and I wound up, my cat absolutely loved it, and that wound up being a game that we played all the time. It's amazing. But practicing it is really important, and it's the trigger systems for each of the traps. Once you learn those trigger systems, then whatever you want to accomplish, again, it's in the gray matter. You can work your way back and figure out, well, this is how it's going to get done.
Well, you know what's interesting is, just for you to mention that, my first instinct in my own head here would be a trap that you would set up that something would fall onto an animal probably wouldn't work because the animal's reflexes are too good, but apparently not.
No, there are certain ways to set the traps. The traps, such as the Paiute deadfall, is one of the fastest traps, and they would catch rats and mice with that. And you don't have to set the rock so it's standing vertical, completely vertical. It's at an angle, and your trigger system or the bait that the animal is going after is back underneath the rock to where it's almost touching the ground. So the animal has to go all the way underneath that rock that's barely being held up to grab that piece of bait, which then triggers the rock to fall, which, if set correctly, and that's a big thing with traps, you have to know what you're doing because it really is not a game. To take in any animal's life, you have to do it correctly and as quickly as possible to not cause him pain. So once we teach the proper way of trapping, the animal goes to get the bait. He's far enough under that rock, so when it finally does get set, he cannot get out fast enough, so that way he doesn't suffer as well.
Interesting. Wow. Wilderness skills instructor, yeah. Right here in my studio. See, that's why I have to go with you. I'm telling you, I've never learned all that. I don't have time to learn all this stuff. Anyway, Chris Galloway has been my guest, and I think it's absolutely fascinating. Give us the website again.
The website would be Headwaters Outdoor School.
So it's HWOS.
HWOS in Mount Shasta, California, and the owner of the school's name is Tim Corcoran. A great place to be.
All right, sir. I thank you very much for coming in and taking the time to share with us.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
You betcha.
It's 5 o'clock this morning and the sun is on the rise. There's frosting on the window pane and sorrow in your eyes. The stars are fading quietly. Night is nearly gone. So you turn away from me, and tears begin to come, and it's goodbye again. I'm sorry to believe in you, goodbye again. As if you didn't know, it's goodbye again. And I wish you could tell me, why do we always fight when I have to go? It seems a shame to leave you now, your days are soft and warm. I long to live. give you back the smile. Other voices beckon me, and for a little while it's goodbye again. I'm sorry to be leaving you, goodbye again. As if you didn't know. If your hours are empty now, who am I to blame? You think if I were always here, our love would be the same. As it is, the time we have is worth the time alone. Lying by your side, the greatest peace I've ever known. It's goodbye again. I'm sorry to be leaving you. Goodbye again. As if you didn't know, it's goodbye again. And I wish you could tell me, why do we always fight when I have to go?
Like having the kids, you know what I mean? They just have to go home. They get all ornery. You know, it's just one of those things. Hi, you're Bill Bank of Talkers Chief Friends and Neighbors Network. It is it's about 12 now before the hour, 2 o'clock. And the weekend's here. Have another beer. And there's lots of stuff once again going on this weekend, as always. Let me remind you, if I may, of something else that's coming up on the 21st, and that is the American Pride Ride Poker Run. It's a welcome home to the Iraq and Afghanistan vets on July 21st from 8 a.m. at the Faces of Freedom for Veterans Memorial, and finishing this in Atascadero Lake Park. $30 a person. You'll receive a vent pin, T-shirt, food and drink, entertainment, the whole thing. So you can purchase tickets to visit Ted Miles Motors, Two Wheels, or call 466-2411, and you can pay. And so the money will go to the Vets Express, which, and by the way, I've been at things and had the vets say how much they appreciate the fact that that's working for them. Because it's usually the people with the greatest need that has to, you know, that don't have cars, that don't have transportation, can't get to places that they get to. Here's another thing that's going on with Charter, which I thought I'd tell you about. It's they did this again last year. The bands from all over have entered what they call the second annual Charter Center Stage. It's a Battle of the Bands contest. Now you can help choose the winner. Get to know the bands and watch their music videos at charter.com/centerstage. Then you vote for your favorite one. You can vote for once a day until August 20th. For the best streaming experience, do everything online. By the way, uninterrupted, you'll want to have super fast Charter internet with speeds up to 30 megs. You can get Charter internet for only $29.99 per month for 12 months. You can also enter for a chance to win awesome prizes. And if you're a band, it's not too late to enter. Upload your music video by July 30th for a chance to open for a national act playing in front of thousands of fans. Plus, take home a prize package valued up to $25,000. Check out charter.com/centerstage to learn more and vote now. Restrictions apply. See charter.com/centerstage for details. Here you are, the Battle of the Bands. So it's an old-fashioned name, but I like it. It's got a ring to it that I kind of like. Let me get organized here. I got 5 minutes. That's all right. I'll take it. Well, guess what? It can happen anywhere, and it's happened again, and that is the down at St. Joseph's in Orchid, alleged abuse incidents down there. St. Joseph's High School principal Joseph Myers and former dean of students John Walker have each been charged with a misdemeanor count of failing to pass on a law enforcement report an incident of sexual assault on students by two other students. In addition, Walker has been charged with a second misdemeanor count of failing to report a suspected incident of sexual abuse because prosecutors allege he received but did not disclose a report of sexual assault involving a second student victim by at least one of the two accused students. It's interesting that people of responsibility, and of course Penn State comes to mind for sure, of course, that people of responsibilities, their response to sexual assault is to cover it up, you know, to try to minimize it, when in fact, you know, in my opinion, it should be exact opposite, because there's a victim that's been traumatized, dramatically traumatized, and they're young, is obviously, so it makes no sense to me, but all right, now, we'll try and do local stuff. See what we have locally here. Well, we didn't have a lot of stuff. Atascadero shop working to resolve the mural issue. I wish the mural was better looking. Can I say that honestly? Am I allowed to say that? Yeah, I wish it's more attractive, but anyway, they're working on that. Good riddance to foie gras. This is, you know, they force feed geese and whatnot, and they blow up their livers and all this, and they say it's actually, they don't have a gag reflex, so it's not really cruel. But they say, well, the heck with you. So I don't know how important it is to have this item for food. I don't think I've ever even had it, to tell you the truth. But there you go. All right. Now, here was an interesting letter, I thought, from a Ned in Los Osos who wrote, Private Bradley Manning will have a pretrial hearing on Monday at Fort Meade, Maryland. The impact that his trial will have on the First Amendment is profound and deserves real, independent, intelligent coverage. Most of what I have seen so far and read on Manning has followed official State and Defense Department propaganda. Manning's life and motives are fascinating. He is definitely not a traitor. Why are so many powerful people panicked by what he did? Well, you know why they are. But then you bring up an interesting question about this man, Bradley Manning. And so the question becomes, at what point do you endanger or jeopardize others by information that you've been entrusted with or have access to? And that becomes a very real part of this whole thing. I've never, again, I'm one of these people that, you know, just has never understood how people can be involved in espionage and doing something against their country, but that's me. That's just me. Yeah. I'm an old-fashioned guy. I don't get it. Was there anything else? No, there's all these other people that are just spouting off. And then here's what the Penn State probe reveals, which is what it did. It revealed something terribly, terribly awful. Here's one more letter I got to share. Kelly from Atascadero wrote this letter. She says, this is in response to Joe Tarika's column, Atascadero Shoppers Deserve Better. I'm a retailer. I've owned Kelly's Casuals for the past 6 years, located across the street from the Walmart project. I, as well as other hardworking quality business owners in Atascadero, find your views of shopping at Atascadero very insulting and offensive. Cut-rate retailers strung out one after another like a strand of fake pearls. Really, Joe, there are great business people in this town of Atascadero. Go ahead and contact the wonderful staff at Atascadero Chamber of Commerce and do your homework. Walmart will not only keep people shopping here, but will also attract new customers, creating more money flow and tax revenue, and will fill empty lots, eventually creating a newly restored classy town that will bring life to our area. An estimated 300 new jobs will be attributed to the Walmart store, as well as jobs that will open with the completion of surrounding restaurants and office buildings and new stores. We already believe we're better than what you've labeled us, so keep laughing, Joe, and take a look at what Walmart did for downtown Paso Robles. You know something? I don't think about it. I'll confess to you, I don't think about the Walmart in Paso Robles. I forget about that. Now, I don't know if the Walmart is directly responsible for the how well Paso Robles downtown has done in recent years. Matter of fact, I'm not sure I'm buying that one. They're off in two different directions, actually. So I don't think so.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and we'll get together again on Monday at 12 noon. Until then, may all your trails be happy ones, and don't believe everything you hear here, because
this is Talk is Cheap. The game is over. The Friends and Neighbors Network. Game over. With Bill Benica.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails. Keep smiling until then.
Happy trails to you till we meet
Rocky Mountain High.